information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border
it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
If we make it through December, everything's going to be all right, I know. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 241 of Media Monarchy. It's December 2nd, 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, Battlefield America and a confidence crisis, elections, evidence, investigations, nominations, plus Foster Farm, Obese Ohio, and peanut butter time on Food World Order, media seizures, mystics and deep events and holy hexes, Connect, Carrier IQ, and Siphon on cyberspace war, and so very much more, my friends. Episode 241, December 2nd, 2011, MediaMonarchy.com.
If we make it through December, everything's gonna be all right, I know. It's the coldest time of winter, and I shiver when I see the falling snow. If we make it through December, got plans to be in a warmer town come summertime. Maybe even California. If we make it through December, we'll be fine. Got laid off down at the factory, and their timing's not the greatest in the world. Heaven knows I've been working hard. Wanted Christmas to be right for Daddy's girl. I don't mean to hate December. It's meant to be the happy time of year. And my little girl don't understand why Daddy came for no Christmas here. If we make it through December, everything's gonna be alright, I know. It's the coldest time of winter, and I shiver when I see the falling snow. If we make it through December, got plans to be in a warmer town come summertime. Maybe even California. If we make it through December, we'll be fine.
If we make it through December, the one and only Merle Haggard, title track from his 1973 album, If We Make It Through December, and we're asking that question right now, my friends. on episode 241 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's December 2nd, 2011. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com. Broadcasting live, as always, Friday mornings, 10 a.m. Pacific time, on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And a huge thanks to the stations that simulcast this show, zeropointradio.com and revereradio.net, and all the other folks out there in the world who help spread the word about this show. A huge thanks to you, and welcome to wherever and whenever you are in the world, listening live right now in your garden, or listening later on your commute to work, or wherever you are. I appreciate you taking the time to spend the time to go through all the media, all the alternative news that tells a story. It's the real news remixed for you. You can find all our archives on radioforall.net and archive.org. We always thank tragedyandhope.com. And remind you that we are on FaceSpace, Twitter, Tube, Tumblr, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, all with Media Monarchy as your keyword or username. We have a donate button. Your support helps keep Media Monarchy going and growing. And I want to thank a first-time donor, Jerry in Utah. Huge thanks to him. And as well, Samuel in Belgium, one of our longtime, most recurring donors to Media Monarchy. As we glance at the breaking news again on this December 2nd, 2011, 1 hour ago from the Wall Street Journal, unemployment slips to 8.6% as private sector adds jobs. Dollar rises against euro. Meanwhile, next moves unclear on payroll tax cut extension. Mitt Romney gets tough with Newt Gingrich. Why Royal Dutch Shell Oil is pulling out of Syria. And Zynga tests the IPO waters with a $7 billion target. That, as well as other names like Mitt Romney, Motley Crue, Vladimir Putin, and JetBlue. We'll always leave the breaking news page open so we see what goes down live for you, my friends. So very much to go over this week, and we'll get right to it. Episode 93 of New World next week, the weekly video series between myself and James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, NewWorldNextWeek.com. 15 minutes, three main stories, 2 years plus now going strong, and I love doing it and am proud to be a part of it. Story number one, U.S. stocks surge. Dow Jones notches biggest gain since March 2009. And a related note, did you hear the one about the three asset managers who won hundreds of millions of dollars in the Powerball lottery in Connecticut? We'll touch on another part of that a little later in our other EconoCrash headlines. And our second story from cyberspacewar.com, cyber war explodes in Syria with State Department-funded software called Siphon. And speaking of Intel-connected software, Hunting the Octopus and P-Tech and the 9/11 software, all stories related to intelligence-connected software getting into the hands of quote-unquote dissidents or freedom fighters. The related update that we will touch on again later when we cover all the news from cyberspacewar.com, Apple fails to fix security flaw in iTunes for 3 years. And our third story on the latest episode of New World Next Week, episode 93 from newworldnextweek.com, putting the con in decontamination. Advanced technology decontamination. That's where you power wash trees and let all the radioactive evil get down into the roots and down into the soil. So take away from that what you may. NewWorldNextWeek.com is where you can get high-quality, low-quality videos. James and I each put out our own video and audio versions. The redundancy, any way you got it, we'll share it any way we can spread this kind of information. And this takes us to the latest alternative media from the hardest working man in alternative, independent, corporate-free media, CorbettReport.com, episode 210, Hunting the Octopus. Reminding you that in the previous episode, 209, looked at the mysterious death of the aforementioned Danny Casolaro, the journalist who was about to crack the political conspiracy of the century, a plot that he called the Octopus. Episode 210 goes in search of the octopus that Casolaro was indeed hunting. And that gets into Bill Hamilton and Inslaw and the Department of Justice and the Cabazon Indian Reservation and so many more things, my friends. The one bit I can add to that story is a playlist on my YouTube.com/MediaMonarchy channel with a dozen plus videos that I think can at least give you the basic rundown of Danny Casolaro and the octopus. Some of the latest audio and video from CorbettReport.com. What Egyptian Revolution? Meet the SCO, that's the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. That's the preview to the eye-opener brought to you by BoilingFrogsPost.com. And the latest Fukushima update from the end of November, Aqua Chernobyl. And interviews with Joan Nova and F. William Ingdahl. All that and so very much more coming out of CorbettReport.com. Indispensable. My man, Clyde Lewis from right here in Portland, Oregon. Live on the air, five nights a week here in Portland on KXL News. I believe he took a little bit of a break. I was wondering, I wasn't seeing anything coming down the feed chute. And he indeed took a little break. But we do have two of the latest episodes and articles from groundzeromedia.org. World War III, a crisis in confidence. And it directly relates back to what we're going to get into further. And that's the Extinction Directive, Police States of America. I've been telling you recently that there are videos coming from GroundZeroMedia.org, behind the scenes at Ground Zero. It's on YouTube.com/HarryScary23, but we will always provide you the direct link. And since we haven't heard from Clyde lately, and since he took a little bit of a break, let's get his take on the National Defense Authorization Act, or the Extinction Directive.
Hi, I'm Clyde Lewis. Welcome to Ground Zero Behind the Scenes. I've been gone for a while, and a lot of stuff's been going on around the country that is pretty peculiar, but it's also a fulfillment of what I've been talking about for days. A lot of people have been listening to my Best Of shows saying, wow, it sounds like that you're talking about these events as if they were happening today, but you recorded them some weeks ago. And that's because what's going on in this country is frightening. The Constitution's being altered, and a lot of people are making laws or proposing bills that want to become law that are going to make this country a police state. I want to start off by playing you some commercials that are rerunning on MTV right now. They're very effective, talking about the possibility of some sort of police state takeover. Some very interesting and also foretelling type of commercials that were playing sometime around 2006 and now being replayed on MTV. They're very effective in showing us how a police state can happen in this country. It also is very surprising that there were a number of people that were involved with proposing bills that would detain people and send them off to concentration camps. And these bills are still being tossed around right now as we speak. In fact, the original, H.R. 1955, is the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Act. And that was proposed by California Representative Jane Harman. Now, she was a Democrat, and people were thinking, why would a Democrat propose something like this? Well, it's because they don't want people to speak out against the government, because the government is about to make some changes that aren't going to be very popular with the American people. Now, here's something interesting. There was a actual section 1031 and 1032 of the Defense Authorization Act that was proposed by John McCain and Carl Levin. Now, this is actually the same, if not worse, proposal that was first brought to us by Jane Harman, a Democrat. Rand Paul, of course, was speaking, and he said that this was a very, very frightening proposal. Let's watch.
Someday there could be a government in power that is shipping its citizens off for disagreements. There are laws on the books now that characterize who might be a terrorist. Someone missing fingers on their hands is a suspect, according to the Department of Justice. Someone who has guns, someone who has ammunition that is weatherproofed, someone who has more than 7 days of food in their house can be considered a potential terrorist. If you are suspected by these activities, do you want to have the government have the ability to send you to Guantanamo Bay for indefinite detention? A suspect. We're not talking about someone who has been tried and found guilty. We're talking about someone suspected of activities. But some of the things that make you suspicious of terrorism are having food, having more than 7 days of food, missing fingers on your hand, having ammunition, having weatherproofed ammunition, having several guns at your house. Is that enough? Are you willing to sacrifice your freedom for liberty?
I remember when I talked about the first bill that Jane Harman first proposed, everybody was for it because they thought it was good, because they didn't want people to try to attack Barack Obama because he was black, or they suspected he was a Muslim. They thought this is something good. They wanted to detain people who may want to harm the president. Now, it seems that the John McCain proposal, which was supported, by the way, by John McCain, the Jane Harman proposal was supported by John McCain, is now getting a lot of controversy. A lot of people are saying, oh, this is just another attempt by the conservatives to try and take over this country and make it a police state. No, it's an extinction directive that has been in the process for a long time that will reduce this country to a number of autonomous states that are economic zones for the New World Order. That is why we need to pay attention to what's happening, and we need to speak out against these things, because the New World Order is here. They're just waiting for any excuse to try and implement it and push the police state here in the United States. I'm Clyde Lewis, and this is Ground Zero Behind the Scenes.
Which brings us directly to the discussion at hand. Senate bill to turn U.S. into battlefield. We posted this story Sunday, November 27th, on MediaMonarchy.com. This is one of those stories that had a lot of coverage, so there's no way as one source we're going to be able to give you everything out there. But we provide a lot of other links, washingtonsblog.com, ACLU.org, Infowars.com, the Philadelphia Weekly, the Library of Congress, thomas.loc.gov, Global Research, and so much more. But we'll take this text from Press TV. American rights activists have slammed the U.S. Senate for the bill that would define, and it has, where this, we'll have to speak about it in past tense, because, of course, all of these things have gone through with the corrupt, crony Congress critters. Defines the whole United States as a battlefield and would allow the military to arrest American citizens in their own backyard without charge or trial. The reaction came as the ACLU said that, quote, the Senate, whether Congress will give this president and every future president the power to order the military to pick up and imprison without charge or trial civilians anywhere in the world. The power is so broad that even U.S. citizens could be swept up by the military, and the military could be used far from any battlefield, even within the United States itself, end quote. Under the worldwide indefinite detention charge without charge or trial provision of the bill, S-1867, Senate Bill 1867, the National Defense Authorization Act, basically says in law for the first time that the homeland is part of a battlefield, so said Lindsey Graham out of South Carolina. This bill was, of course, drafted in secret by senators like Carl Levin, Democrat of Michigan, and John McCain, Republican of Arizona, before being passed in a closed-door committee without any kind of hearing. We have the updates. We have many comments left on this story, and this was our biggest, most viewed story of the past week. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of views. And it's back and forth basically about the legalese. But others note that we let Occupy fail, so now this is happening. I think the simpler note is that they have already had these powers. They've already essentially claimed all of these powers. The unitary executive has claimed these powers to the state. They just need to put it down in writing and maybe retroactively cover some ass. So, the updates from the Associated Press. Senate backs military custody of terror suspects. Obama lawyers say citizens targeted if at war with the U.S. 15 Democrats joined with the Republicans to give the military power to imprison suspects indefinitely. We'll get to that when we cover our West Virginia worry. Treason from within, the road towards a police state in America, from Global Research. Americans could be stripped of their rights and sent to Guantanamo Bay. That's from Brass Check TV. A long piece from Kurt Nemo on the NDAA, another step in the fascist takeover of America.
And there's also a video, and apparently Battlefield America became the hashtag, if you will, for this story, as I guess everything has to be now reduced to that, and I'm guilty of it myself. So there's a long clip from Democracy Now!, but let's listen to someone we've already heard from a few moments ago within the clip from GroundZeroMedia.org, again with Rand Paul discussing the Extinction Directive.
Under the provisions, would it be possible that an American citizen then could be declared an enemy combatant and sent to Guantanamo Bay and detained indefinitely?
I think that as long as that individual, no matter who they are, if they pose a threat to the security of the United States of America, should not be allowed to continue that threat.
To continue that threat, I'm infuriated by Senator McCain's nonsensical and unconstitutional answer. I'm sure our next guest is too. Senator Rand Paul was questioning Senator McCain on our top story tonight. A bill written in secret by Senator McCain and Senator Carl Levin that would give the U.S. military and not civilian law enforcement agencies the ability to arrest anyone and hold that person indefinitely, even if that person is an American arrested on American soil. Here to discuss this frustrating development is Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul. Before we get into the politics of who voted for it and who voted against it, what's your take on what's going on here? I mean, everybody in the Senate took an oath to uphold the Constitution, which says no person, doesn't even say no American, it says no person shall be denied life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And here they go ahead and vote for legislation that denies it.
Well, you know, we had a discussion about this among some Republicans at lunch, and one other Republican senator read from the Constitution and pointed out all the places where you are guaranteed a trial by a jury, while you're guaranteed a speedy trial, while you're guaranteed habeas corpus, you're guaranteed all these rights, and it does strike me as perplexing that anyone could vote to send an American citizen who's been accused of a crime to a detention center in a foreign land without due process. Really is beyond me.
Without asking you to share confidential conversations, what justification did these people give for this? They all took, I'm talking about your fellow Republicans, I think only Senator Kirk from Illinois joined you. Even Mike Lee voted for this, a shocking development, which he and I will discuss in another show. But what are the Republicans trying to accomplish when they defy the Constitution, which they took an oath to uphold?
Well, here's what most of them argued. Most of them argue that Hamdi and Quirin, two Supreme Court cases, have justified holding U.S. citizens as enemy combatants. They also argued that the Padilla case did, but that wasn't a Supreme Court case. I guess my point is that I agreed with Scalia, who is the dissent in the Hamdi case, and who said that really high treason has been tried in our courts usually, and it is the exception to ever give up our rights. It's happened during war, but my point about this is a war without end. I'm afraid of giving up the right to trial by jury and hoping that someday they will declare an end to this war and they'll give back the right to trial by jury. It really concerns me.
It's very interesting how people can twist and torture language. Hamdi was a case lost by the Bush administration in which Justice O'Connor said everybody's entitled to a trial. And Quirin was a case lost by the Franklin Delano Roosevelt administration, which said even a German saboteur who was born in the United States of America was captured trying to blow up munitions plants during World War II was entitled to a trial. But here you have colleagues of yours. I know this isn't the law yet. The vote earlier today was on a procedural amendment, which indicates how this is likely to turn up. Colleagues of yours who can read the Constitution as you do, basically throwing up their arms and saying, well, since presidents before Obama have gotten away with this, we might as well write it into the law and let him and successors do so lawfully what the other presidents took a chance on doing?
Well, their other argument is that there will be one procedural hurdle, and the procedural hurdle is that there will be a habeas, or you have to present the body. The judge has to rule on whether or not the person can be held. But my argument to them was that, to me, is the beginning of due process. That's not the end of due process. To have a habeas hearing before a judge to see if you can hold a prisoner is the beginning of due process, but that's not all of due process. Due process involves a jury trial, a judge, legal help on both sides of the equation in a conclusion, so there's much more than just a habeas hearing.
Right.
But they claim that having a habeas hearing is enough. But the problem is then you hold somebody after one hearing, you can hold them indefinitely. Their argument also is they say, well, 27% of the prisoners we've released from Guantanamo went back into combat. But my response to them was, those 27% that were released weren't released because of due process. They were released because some generals in the administration decided to let them go. It had nothing to do with due process letting them go.
Got
in fact, due process, we've convicted several people in the United States through due process who were terrorists.
Interesting. I wonder how the American people will feel when they see troops in the streets on a regular basis. Something no one now living has seen since it ended the last time in 1876. Senator Paul, it's a pleasure, even when we discuss these unpleasant matters. Thanks for joining us.
So we glance over to try and see what the latest on the NDAA passage an hour ago from Lawfare blog. They have the final transcript from the Senate floor on the National Defense Authorization Act passage. Inhofe supports detainee provisions. Deranged U.S. Senate votes for military detention of all terror suspects. No, the NDAA does not give unreviewable discretion to detain. So there's a lot of, again, as we say, back and forth and discussion and quibbling about the legalese. But we know how they roll. We've seen it before. We see the pattern. Let's look abroad at the pattern, at the story that began at the very beginning of this tumultuous 2011, with the Arab Spring, they called it, an intelligence operation with a code name if there ever was one. But we see now nearly a year later, at the end of the year, now Egypt awaits election results. We posted this story Wednesday, November 30th, to MediaMonarchy.com, and I believe we are still waiting to see results, and we'll look for updates in a moment after we apprise you of the situation at large. Initial results of Egypt's first parliamentary election since the fall of President Hosni Mubarak were due as early as Thursday. Both the Muslim Brotherhood and the Al-Noor Salafi Muslim Party have claimed a lead in ballot counting, but election officials have been tight-lipped. Voting took place Monday and Tuesday, the first in a multi-step process to pick members of the lower house of parliament. The lawmakers will then be tasked with drafting a new constitution. It was the first time some Egyptians, young and old, ever cast ballots after three decades of Mubarak's rule. And one clip for you, my friends, that we'll grab from the AFP. Hardline Islamist surge in Egypt polls.
Counting is still underway, but Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood Party says its alliance is out in front in the country's first free election since 1952. Results from the first round of the ballot, which is being spread out over 6 weeks, are expected on Thursday. Muslim Brotherhood is hoping for a strong parliamentary presence to take on the authority of ruling army generals. Violence broke out in Cairo's Tahrir Square when polls closed on Tuesday. The protesters calling on the military to step aside immediately. At least 80 people were hurt. Despite pressure to allow total civilian rule, the military council is insisting it will retain overall power to choose or dismiss a cabinet. Some demonstrators are vowing to stay in Tahrir Square until the army gives up power.
So we grab the update, and it's essentially the same as it was when we posted it 3 days ago now. From CNN International, Dateline Cairo, posted 36 minutes ago, again on this Friday, December 2nd, 2011, Egyptians eagerly awaited results Friday in the first election since the fall of President Hosni Mubarak, a vote that could catapult Islamists into powerful roles in governments. And of course, those Islamists don't have any connections to the international intelligence networks and interlocking families of multi-generational serial killers and Western finance oligarchs. No connection. Our related geopolitical updates. U.S. says airstrike was not a deliberate attack on Pakistan. We'll grab this from the French agency press posted to spacewar.com. The Pentagon insisted Wednesday that a NATO airstrike that killed 24 Pakistani soldiers near the Afghan border was in no way a deliberate U.S. attack on Pakistan. The incident over the weekend infuriated Islamabad, with Pakistani officials saying the airstrike was unprovoked and possibly a premeditated act of aggression. Meanwhile, Al-Qaeda claims to be holding U.S. hostage in Pakistan. Britain expels Iranian diplomats after embassy attack. And Canadians are prime targets for sexpionage. This story from MontrealGazette.com. And again, hat tip to my man James Corbett at CorbettReport.com. Picture it. A junior executive excited to be traveling to Hong Kong, representing his company at the table with potential Chinese investors. Little does he know they'll be the ones doing the courting, and the consequences for his career and his company can cost millions. It happens all the time, says Brian McAdam, a former Canadian diplomat who now specializes in Chinese organized crime. It's the commingling of the oldest profession and the second oldest profession, prostitution and espionage. McAdam spoke at the Canadian Industrial Security Conference and with other officials who frequently travel abroad. Canadian business people and government officials specifically are prime targets for sexpionage, because until now, Canadians have been as babes in the woods, only recently becoming aware that foreign spies will pay good money to steal our ideas. It's probably insulting to Canadians. You would never have thought that a hooker would be paid to get info from you. Never seen that in a movie over the last 80 years. But I like sexpionage. Of course, we're always a fan of portmanteaus. Natalie Portmanteaus, if you will. Let's keep moving with everything we have posted to the main flagship site, MediaMonarchy.com. Tuesday, November 29th, we posted up a War Horrors update list on drones, drills, and defense. Many of these coming from the Danger Room blog on Wired. And we follow blogs like that. One, their coverage is always pretty decent. But they so gleefully report about these weapons of war. They, as we've quipped in the past, they've never met a military-industrial complex toy that they don't love. It's a drones world. We just live in it. And it has lots of pictures of Israeli drones and U.S. drones and drones from around the world. Meanwhile, the Air Force says reporters not welcome at the drone base anymore. Mini-missile promises to shrink the drone war. Do you see a theme here, my friends? Mini-nukes and nine more air weapons that will blow you away. I added the exclamation point, but it's really not stretching it that far. Meanwhile, successful U.S.-Korean exercises relied on Lockheed Martin simulation technology, or Lockmart Simtech, if you're nasty. Hero Marine sues defense giant BAE after sniper scope fight. Marine Sergeant Dakota Meyer is perhaps this country's best-recognized war hero, a man who risked his life over and over again to save his buddies from a Taliban ambush. That's why he's the only living Marine to be awarded the Medal of Honor, the nation's highest award for valor, for his actions in Afghanistan or Iraq, the Medal of Honor. It's undoubtedly one reason why the defense giant BAE Systems hired Meyer after he left the Marine Corps. Then, BAE considered selling high-tech sniper rifle scopes to the Pakistani military. Meyer objected, given Islamabad's unambiguous relationship with the terrorists and militants based in Pakistan. Then he quit. Suddenly, Meyer's former bosses at BAE started calling the war hero mentally unstable and a drunk. That's according to a lawsuit filed by Meyer against BAE, which alleges that the defense behemoth blocked the retired Marine from getting a job with a competitor by slandering his character as being a mentally unstable drunk. You know, the Pakistani intelligence services and their relationship with the Central Intelligence Agency that was part and parcel, hand in glove, in the creation of the ISI. Meanwhile, the UK's Ministry of Defense sure loses a ton of technology. DigitalTrends.com reports that if losing electronic equipment was an Olympic sport, the UK's MOD might well take the gold. In the last 18 months alone, the government department has lost possession of a large number of laptops, hard disks, USB sticks, and more, besides raising concerns about security. Oh, here's the number list. 287 computers, 72 hard disks, 73 USBs, 28 mobile phones, 194 CDs and DVDs in the last 18 months alone. They're just incompetent. All these things are, oh, they're all totally, they're just lost. They're in basements. They just, oh, they got stepped on. The cat crapped on them. They aren't used to filter out into the world of right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing, intelligence triple agent world. Our final note on this War Horse breakdown on drones, drills, and defense. Again, from Danger Room. White House says, we're really, really ending the Iraq War, and this story has been updated from its original posting on the last day of November. The White House says it's on track to remove the remaining 15,000 U.S. troops from Iraq by New Year's Eve 2011, despite some apparent misreporting from Baghdad, which we breathlessly repeated. There again, using the comma phrase from Danger Room. In a joint press appearance on Tuesday, Vice President Joe Biden and Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki seemed to suggest that U.S. troops might return to Iraq in 2012. Maliki, whose government has balked at a continued presence, says there's no doubt the U.S. forces have a role in providing training of Iraqi forces. Biden seemed to go further, talking about a robust security relationship, including on subjects like training, intelligence, and counterterrorism. The war is over. The war goes on forever. We've always been at war with Oceania. If We Make It Through December was the title of our opening song, and it's also the title of our December 1st news purge. Posted late last night to MediaMonarchy.com. The news purge is where we put everything else in a headline list, all organized with bookmark, sidebar, Google Reader, feed, RSS, and all your amazing news tips. And a huge thanks and appreciation to everybody who helps me out as I've pretty much drowned in the amount of feeds that I imported into Google Reader, somehow making it kind of wieldy and unusable. I've been relying more on emailed tips and tweets to get the most, I think, on-point information boiled down to its essence. But I digress. Let's begin this December 1st news purge, if we make it through December, with one from DigitalJournal.com. Extreme weather sets record in 2011, bare-knuckle years ahead. Extreme weather events in the U.S. this year caused more than $10 billion in damages, with recent events likely to drive the figure skyward, as experts say climate change will cause even greater destruction in years to come. This year alone, the U.S. has experienced extreme heat, exceptional droughts, heavy precipitation, record flooding, and record-setting early snowfalls. These disasters are making local governments and international businesses reassess weather's impact. So, continuing on that theme, one from the New York Times, which may or may not slam behind the paywall depending on which way you link it, but as like everything we cover on Media Monarchy and all the other related websites, we always make a copy, we always save it, we always archive everything. Oklahoma continues string of recent mild earthquakes. The generally placid, well-mannered state of Oklahoma has developed a very West Coast habit of late. The state, it seems, has got the shakes. Oklahoma hit by 9 earthquakes since last Monday. That's 2 Mondays ago from now. Most of them concentrated in the area just east of Oklahoma City, according to the National Earthquake Information Center, a division of the United States Geological Survey. The recent tremors have all been slight. The strongest, which hit Thursday, had a magnitude 3.7, the sort of event that makes a water glass tremble but will not knock the wedding china to the floor. Nonetheless, residents accustomed to more stable ground beneath their feet have been startled. It's certainly getting a lot of people's attention. Meanwhile, Santa Ana winds rattle nerves in California, again from the New York Times, and one we did put out on Twitter.com/MediaMonarchy. The headline said it all. Disaster drill derailed by disaster. Federal disaster drill takes a hit from severe weather events. This comes from Federal Computer Week, FCW.com. And it discusses National Level Exercise 2010, the recent drill that went down. What happened, as seemingly happens in so many of the drills, it went live. Not in the same way that practicing of crashing jumbo jets into the National Reconnaissance Office or the Pentagon on or around the events of 9/11 or all the other events. I don't think it's quite like a switch that they can flip on a tornado. Although connections between fracking and these earthquakes, that's been alleged, if you will. So that piece won't load while I hemmed and hawed. National Level Exercise Disaster Drill Derailed by Disasters. Meanwhile, out of South Africa, delegates say it's too early to give up on COP17. Meanwhile, ClimateGate 2.0 rages on. And our last couple of notes on our BioWars EnviroHealth updates. U.S. settles suit from widow of the first anthrax victim. More than a decade after tabloid photo editor Robert Stevens became the first victim of the 2001 anthrax attacks, the U.S. government has agreed to pay his widow and family $2.5 million to settle their lawsuit, according to documents released Tuesday. Stevens, 63, died on October 5, 2001, when a letter containing deadly anthrax spores was opened at the then headquarters in Boca Raton of American Media Incorporated, publisher of the National Enquirer, Sun, and Globe tabloids. Eventually, four other people would die and 17 others would be sickened in a similar letter attack, and attacks which the FBI blames on a lone government scientist who committed suicide. Meanwhile, in Georgia, a white powdery substance in an inmate's letter shut down the Brantley County Courthouse in Georgia as anthrax scares seem to go on continuously, tracked by sites like BioPrepWatch.com. We referenced getting our other EconoCrash updates. What have the central banks of the world done now? As we discussed and went into on the latest New World Next Week episode, there were those three events that made the Dow Jones spike to its highest level since March 2009. But of course, there are fundamental problems, and the economiccollapseblog.com gets into them about the moves that central banks have made. You can just think of it as upping the junkie fix. Or you could get it from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, How Central Banks Eased World Economy. Meanwhile, factory stall worldwide, U.S. jobless claims rise, and those three Powerball winners say there is no secret fourth. We discussed the suspicious switching of the letters, or rather the numbers picked, the mistake of reading the wrong numbers. Three money managers awarded $254 million Powerball jackpot said Tuesday there's no fourth participant, despite a claim they're covering for a winner who wants to stay anonymous. History mystery. Stalin's daughter, Lana Peters, dies in the U.S. We have pieces from ABC News, as well from the Big Brother Corporation. The only daughter of Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin has died in the U.S. at the age of 85. Svetlana, also known as Lana Peters, died of colon cancer at a care home in the state of Wisconsin last Tuesday. Her defection from the Soviet Union in 1967 was a propaganda coup for the U.S. She wrote four books, including two best-selling memoirs, but she said she could not escape the shadow of her father. There's more on that story of Lana Peters and, of course, Stalin at large. But our other history mystery note, again, thanks to BrassCheckTV.com, new evidence shows, of course, no surprise, that RFK Patsy Sirhan Sirhan may, of course, in fact, be innocent.
Well, significant new claims about the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy. Lawyers for the man convicted of killing the brother of President John F. Kennedy, who was himself a presidential candidate at the time, RFK was, coming forward with new forensic evidence that they say will prove their client's innocence after more than four decades. Trace Gallagher has the latest now. Trace?
Sirhan is now 67 years old, Megan. Remember that he admitted killing Kennedy with, quoting, 20 years of malice aforethought. He later recanted that confession, has appealed many times, and has always failed. Well, now his lawyers say they have significant new forensic evidence that will get this conviction set aside. Now, remember, prosecutors all along have said that 8 shots were fired and 3 of them hit Kennedy. The lawyers now say they have used sophisticated audio equipment to go back and listen to the recordings of the assassination to show that 13 shots were fired from multiple guns and that Sirhan's pistol was only able to fire 8 bullets. And they now claim they have proof that the bullet that was taken from Robert Kennedy's neck did not match Sirhan's gun and that it was switched with another bullet before the trial. There's no explanation of how they plan to prove that. The lawyers say that a second gunman was there. They just don't know who the second gunman was. California's attorney general is the one who's handling the appeal. There has been no comment at all from the California AG. So now Sirhan's lawyers are asking a judge
for an evidentiary hearing. The clip cuts off. But the lawyers, including, of course, the amazing Dr. William Pepper, who has done great work on behalf of folks like Martin Luther King. But let's get this straighter. They're saying that there was this sort of triangulation or a crossfire of multiple shooting teams with a patsy put into place who may or may not have ever pulled the trigger on anything that actually fired a bullet. And then those guns and bullets were kind of swapped and lost and kind of changed and, that sounds familiar. Oh, well, I don't have time to remember what other King Kill 33 ceremony that was, because we have to move to our media meme updates on this 12-1 news purge if we make it through December. Same as it ever was as we slap our foreheads in disgust at another Grammy nomination list. We have quipped many times, and I think I coined it, and I'll stop saying quipped, that the Grammys make the Oscars look like the Independent Spirit Awards. Oscars, they'll cover independent, smaller films, foreign, all around the world, amazing things. The Grammys are the safest, lamest bunch of crap that I think it's like well-meaning liberals who are actually the big audience for all the stupid right-wing shows because they just want to seethe and have their 2 minutes hate about Palin or whatever idiot of the week it is from the GOP faux news gang. So they can seethe about that and use all their psychic energy and still put it all into there. Apparently, I like to put some of my angry psychic energy into lame, safe, mainstream media. We do give you the link. It's always, I find, amazing and fascinating and quite educational to actually go down the list of the complete Grammy nomination, all the categories. It'll blow your mind, actually, how many categories there are. But there are ridiculous things, as always, and there are stories in the past and recent past. But on this very one, it has the, I believe, the best electronic album category. Has, you know, the great Zonoscope album from Cut Copy this year. And they've also got, I believe, Skrillex and Barbra Streisand, of course. So, same as it ever was, as the throne. We watch the throne, and we watch the mass media symbolism that guides all our pop rap superstars, as the one and only Kanye West, of course, tops the Grammy nomination list.
Music journalist Joe Levy has covered the industry for Rolling Stone and Maxim. He was here with us Wednesday morning with his Grammy nomination predictions. Today, the big reveal. How did Joe do? Good morning.
You did good.
I did not too bad. Not too bad. Yeah. Didn't take too many risks, I have to admit. I went with Adele, and that was a safe bet. She got plenty of nominations in the major categories.
She did. 6 of them. How do you think she will do, though, on Grammy night?
I think she's going to do great. Did you hear the cheers in the room last night when they announced her nominations? Everyone is pulling for her. She's got this great story. Not only is the album about heartbreak and getting over it, but now she's had vocal surgery. The big story is she going to be able to sing at the Grammys? Yeah. And voters are going to be thinking about that leading up to this.
So she'll be there regardless. It's just a question of whether she sings or not.
That's right. Right.
Okay.
Whether she's recovered enough to sing at that point.
Bruno Mars, 6. Surprise.
Very happy to see Bruno Mars get 6 nominations. I am surprised that he got 6. I'm not surprised that he got multiple nominations. He is a multiple threat. He's a great singer. singer. He's a great songwriter. He's a great producer. Last year, he was nominated for work he did for CeeLo and others. This year,
didn't he have like seven nominations last year?
I don't think it was seven, but he sure was up there.
And how old?
26 years old.
Goodness.
there were also, we can't forget Kanye West, who leads the pack. Seven nominations,
and the story there is that he's got two albums that are eligible, his own, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, and his collaboration with Jay-Z, Watch the Throne. So the big chatter on Twitter today is, why didn't Kanye get an Album of the Year nomination? It's his best record, it's a career-defining record. I say he split the voters, and that
you know,
some people voted for Watch the Throne for Album of the Year, and some people voted
He's pretty outspoken. Has he said anything about
that
nomination?
No, I think he's a little too smart to jump on it right now.
Okay.
Let's wait and see what happens. Plenty of time for him to type on Twitter and tell us what he thinks.
I mean, like Bon Iver, right?
Bon Iver, big story last night. I was expecting a Best New Artist nomination for him. He is a folk artist with a lot of atmospheric backdrop, but Song of the Year, Record of the Year? I was not expecting that. And he's got six nominations, three in the major categories. His exposure, a lot of the public first met him when he collaborated with Kanye. So there's Kanye's touch yet again.
And one could argue that his previous album was better than...
I would argue that. You and I think, both agree that the previous Bon Iver record, the first one, but he's nominated for Best New Artist. It's his second album. The Grammys are always doing stuff like that.
It's always weird how they do that.
Yes.
So they're snubbing a few people, too.
Sure.
Tony Bennett, as we mentioned.
Right.
Is that just because he's been around for a while? So they say,
you know, I think a major story this year is that there are no old guys in the big categories. Paul Simon had a good record. Tony Bennett had a record that hit number one. No nominations in Album of the Year, Song of the Year, none of the major categories for them. And Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift has three Grammy noms, but none in the major categories. So you don't have to be old to be snubbed by the Grammys.
That seemed like maybe the biggest surprise of all of the night.
Especially after her recent wins in the last couple weeks.
You know, and all I can think is maybe there's a little bit of Taylor fatigue. She's won so much, maybe they're just ready to take a pause. Taylor pause.
And she's what, 21? Speaking of the young musicians versus the old ones here.
Crazy.
Joe Levy, always good to see you, sir.
Good to be here.
And thanks for bringing the new music, by the way.
Oh, you're going to enjoy those records. Somebody got a gift.
I'm pumped.
You can catch the 54th Grammy Awards on February 12th. Only right here on CBS.
Oh, thank you, CBS, for that invigorating coverage of the Grammys. I feel so very informed. We've noted that if you're on an independent label, you pretty much have next to zero chance of getting a Grammy nomination. However, last year, Arcade Fire broke that mold and won for Album of the Year, The Suburbs, on Merge Records, indie label out of Chapel Hill, run by the gang in Superchunk. And last time I checked, Bon Iver are on an indie. Jag Jaguar, who knows? A few nominations, though, for Pacific Northwest bands, such as Fleet Foxes and others that I now can't remember. Oh, Blitz and Trapper, who are from Portland, Oregon, from right where I sit. As this band, the Decemberists, are from Portland, Oregon. Couple nominations for their record that came out the very first of the year. It was number one on Billboard. It's called The King is Dead. However, we played tracks from that, and we, again, lamented, as I always... I'll tell you, from the college radio background, I used to pick what tracks to play off an album. And I have, I think, a knack for picking good singles. And again, I'm always smacking my forehead with the choices that bands make about which single to put out for an album. They should have put out Calamity Song. It would have been so fitting, and it could have blown up huge as the song described what we were seeing with the calamitous dawn of 2011. But alas, they have followed up The King is Dead full length with a just-released EP called Long Live the King. Get it? It's Portland, Oregon's own The Decemberists with E. Watson on episode 241 of MediaMonarchy.com.
The air all painted pallid gray, the storm was coming in. Folks were lining out in all directions. Me and Hoyt and Henry Short were pitching on the skiff, trying to make it home before the night. And the gray waves were rolling, bowled the brave, brave ocean and rolled us suckers in. Well, I don't keep to goings on. I tend to stick with kin. But Watson had an inn from the beginning. Built that house on Chatham Bend, a whitewashed knotted pine. 90 acres furrowed for the cane. He drove it down from Georgia. His dad a martyred soldier in the war between the states. Lord, bring down the flood. Wash away the blood. Drown these Everglades and put us in our place. Laid Edgar Watson in his grave. We laid him in his grave. Till I'm dust, I'll never know why he came ashore with all those killers gathered on the shoreline. Kicking holes in ugly mud, trigger fingers pinched, a brace of rifles bristled in the wind. And we towed his body northbound, buried him all face down with a good view into hell. Lord, bring down the flood. Wash away the blood. Drown these Everglades and put us in our place. We laid Edgar Watson in his grave. We laid him in his grave. We laid him in his grave. We laid him in his grave.
That's the latest from Portland, Oregon's own The Decemberists from their new EP, Long Live the King. The song is called E. Watson, and it's the first cut on the EP. And the link on Wikipedia, on the album note, sends you to the story of Edgar Watson that took place, or at least this main story, took place in Chokoloskee, Florida, and gets into a bizarre story of outlaws and murder and Lost Man's River in the late 1800s and early 1900s. So, yes, the Decemberists are very literate. George Orwell's Guide to the News. We are covering our media and meme stories on the 12-1 News Purge. If we make it through December, this article, George Orwell's Guide to the News, is the latest from Adrian Salbucci, writing for Russia Today. A piece I saw in the New York Times was interesting. New season for old jokes is basically an article telling you, surprise, surprise, that most network sitcoms are stupid. And the stories have been done before and better, from everything from Seinfeld to Leave It to Beaver and all the others. And all those big new hit shows like New Girl and whatever else, they all suck. So let's go to the movies instead. The Artist silently leads the charge in Oscars race. The silent movie wins Best Film and Director awards from the New York Film Critics. Meanwhile, Brad Pitt is nominated for Best Actor, or won, rather, for Moneyball and Tree of Life. But the film is called The Artist, and it's by Michel Hazanavicius. A nostalgic hymn to Hollywood's golden era has emerged as a genuine contender to be the first silent movie in 80 years to win an Oscar after it was named Best Film by the New York Film Critics Circle and picked up several nominations from the aforementioned Independent Spirit Awards. That piques my curiosity, a silent black and white film about the Hollywood golden age, The Artist. A movie playing currently In a piece from the Washington Post, FBI agents upset over movie alleging J. Edgar Hoover was gay. Can you believe that? But back across the pond, the obituary from The Guardian. Ken Russell, formidable film director with an impish sense of humor and a talent to entertain and provoke. Dead at the age of 84, the provocative director of films you may know, like Tommy and Altered States. Meanwhile, another secret daughter, one from Stalin, now one from Gable. Judy Lewis, the secret daughter of screen stars Clark Gable and Loretta Young, died at the age of 76, but her fascinating story lives on, and you can get more on that from Movie Talk on Yahoo. Meanwhile, Patrice O'Neill, young black comedian mourned by fans and friends, passed away at the much too young age, 41. Jesus. And when I saw the photo and saw some of the screen grabs, I was like, oh, I know that guy. I've seen him do stand-up and sitcoms and things. Much too young, much too unhealthy. I believe he had recently a stroke and he was a big boy. As long as we're doing the obituaries, as long as we're getting maudlin here in the media memes on the 12-1 News Purge, one more for you from HollywoodMemoir.com. Barry Llewellyn, one of the founding members of the reggae rocksteady fantastic Heptones, dies at the age of 64. Some of the things you can find on the Peace and Harmony collection from the indispensable Trojan Records. But let's listen to their classic cover of the classic Bobby Darin tune, Sea of Love, the Heptones.
I won't tell you how much I love you.
the Heptones with the long version of Sea of Love, coming from one of their Studio One sessions from sometime in the late 60s or early 70s. We are well into hour number two of this episode 241 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's December 2nd, 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, broadcasting live, as always, Friday mornings from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and, of course, a huge thanks, zeropointradio.com, revereradio.net, and all the other folks and sites and memes and social network streams that help spread the word about Media Monarchy. We're going down the 12-1 news purge if we make it through December, and we've made it to our murder and mayhem headlines, and appropriately enough, we had to add it to the list. It comes from CarmiTimes.com, and it's out of Chicago, but they titled it Murder Mayhem in Metro East as Man is Convicted of Murdering a 6-year-old from Cahokia, Illinois. A St. Clair County jury found a Cahokia man guilty of first-degree murder in the beating death of his live-in girlfriend's 6-year-old son on Christmas Eve in 2005. Murder and mayhem indeed. Washington Post reporting that retail crime and police activity jumps during holidays. One dead, 16 injured in a Tennessee crash or crashes involving, from this CNN report, 176 cars. News of the weird from clicktohouston.com. Bad dog, Utah hunter shot by his canine companion. Meanwhile, Texas dad fatally shoots his 4 kids, wounds his wife, and a murder charge in a killing near the Occupy Oakland camp. More on that from the San Francisco Guardian. Murder and mayhem, and we always note we try not to be glib about all of these horrible things going on, and we don't want to demean or belittle any of these things. It's there as part of this shell game tapestry and the stories we weave to put together to tell you the story of what went down every week on MediaMonarchy.com. So with all due respect, we continue and we reach our Obamasiah updates, and we'll take it from the always suspicious Sorsha Fall, posting on WhatDoesItMean.com, Obama issues Ron Paul kill order as Russia prepares for war. The Federal Security Service, the FSB, is reporting that the secret letter sent to Prime Minister Putin by Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihiko Noda contains a warning that United States President Barack Obama has issued an executive-level kill order against U.S. Congressman Ron Paul over fears this charismatic politician, who many believe could capture the Republican presidential 2012 nomination, is about to expose to all Americans what can only be described as the largest mass theft in human history. According to this report, Prime Minister Noda first became aware of this kill order after a private meeting with Obama at last week's ASEAN Summit, A-S-E-A-N Summit meeting in Indonesia, when the American president expressed his unconstrained joy over the toppling of the Greek and Italian governments in bloodless coups by EU banksters who installed to run these countries unelected former Goldman Sachs executives. Sorsha Falls reports, they get posted to EU Times, that have white supremacist ties, and she also posts, or whoever this is, posts on WhatDoesItMean.com, and they always somehow relate to secret information gleaned from the SFB out of Russia, and they're always looked at askew, but they are worth noting because, of course, the unfortunate specter we all know is there, that someone like Ron Paul, like so many others, could have a crash of convenience, if you will, and be gotten rid of for whatever reason it may suit the powers that shouldn't be. And as long as we're talking about Obama-Sion-related campaign notes, Gail Collins, writing for the International Herald Tribune, the global edition of the New York Times, has a piece called Okay, Now Ron Paul. Ron Paul, the libertarian congressman from Texas, now seems to have an outside chance of winning the Iowa caucus vote, not the presidential nomination. It seems highly unlikely that the Republicans are going to give the nod to a guy who disapproves of the Patriot Act and marriage licenses. But still, he's definitely having a moment, and therefore I feel obliged to add into our survey of presidential candidate book reports. So, this writer for the corporate mouthpieces stoops to actually condescend to discuss Ron Paul, which of course they barely do. Russian TV anchor fired over gesture at Obama. The video is there, but it is in Russian, and you can see this woman flip the bird the second she says President Barack Obama. But the story came out, she was actually flipping the bird, and you can watch it and know it from watching the clip the first time. She thought they had cut away already, and she was, I believe, arguing and having a battle with off-screen tech people who were screwing with her. Clarence Thomas and the lovely Elena Kagan both asked to sit out the health care case by both sides. Conservative interest groups and Republican lawmakers want Justice Elena Kagan off the health care case. Liberals and Democrats in Congress say it's Justice Clarence Thomas who should sit it out. Neither justice is budging the right decision, according to many ethicists and legal experts. Since when did that carry any weight? Breaking news, Barney Frank not seeking re-election for 2012.
And I have to tell you, I was just on the phone with several people up in Massachusetts and shockwaves right now. The fact that Barney Frank has decided to retire after serving 16 terms in the House. Now, he will not seek re-election. And for Democrats, this is Massachusetts after all. It's very likely they will keep hold of his seat. But the fact of the matter is he has been a titan when it comes to financial service issues on Capitol Hill. He was the chairman of the Financial Services Committee when Democrats held the majority. And he still has been a very strong voice for Democratic ideals and what have you on Capitol Hill. But he did have controversy as well. He was considered to be one of the best debaters in Congress. You did not want to get on the floor, Kara, and get into an argument with him. I have to tell you, as a reporter, I was working for some Massachusetts newspapers at the time of President Clinton's impeachment. And I remember asking Congressman Frank a specific question, which he didn't like. And he tore me apart. Afterwards, I just sulked away. And it took a few other reporters here to come up to me and say, look, you have arrived. This is when I was a young reporter. You have arrived. If you get torn apart by Barney Frank, it means you have arrived. So he was a very tough person to deal with on Capitol Hill, whether you were a Republican, a reporter, or even a Democrat that he disagreed with, Kara.
Well, I think he respected you more when you're tough. And you, as a young reporter, also ask tough questions, Mark. You know, you've got to hold politicians accountable.
Yeah, you do. But I have to tell you, Barney Frank was one of these people who was always the smartest person in the room. And that was one of his strengths on Capitol Hill. He could always go toe-to-toe with Republicans, but at times he was abrasive. Now, what's interesting about Barney Frank is that back in 1987, he came out and he acknowledged that he was gay, which was a big deal at the time. And he went on to wear this as a badge of honor on his sleeve and probably helped many other folks who were in the closet and didn't want to talk about their sexuality to come out. So Barney Frank has done a lot to promote democratic ideals, but he also did a lot, actually, for the gay community.
Now, IBTimes.com has a piece called 10 Things to Know About the Congressman, Barney Frank, but what is not on that list is the allegations of running a gay brothel out of his apartment. But there is, and I found it funny that there was even a thread about it on the Yahoo Answers page, so that's what we gave you the link to. What was Barney Frank's punishment for running a gay brothel out of his apartment? That's perhaps a tad disingenuous, but the story is there, and of course the specter of Penn State scandal, the Franklin scandal, and international child kidnapping and abuse rings. Those specters are very near. We reach Oregon Oddities with a piece from the Willy Week, our one of a few weekly free newspapers here, the Willamette Week, WWeek.com. 30 missing minutes. Portland Christmas tree bomber by the numbers. This story just breaks down all the information, all the informant information, all the times. Cases of trying to say this is entrapment, but oh, of course they never work. Numbers are key to the fate of the accused Christmas tree bomber that we have now seen the year anniversary go by as it happened on Black Friday 2010. But the part we want to note is, of course, what we noted before when it happened. That the cops claimed they had a 30-minute meeting at Pioneer Courthouse Square, but they didn't get any of that meeting on tape. That was the meeting that their whole case hinges on, the one where he agreed to do all of it, and it would all have been an airtight case. But whoops, of course, they either didn't record it or lost it or who knows what in the latest Patsy case. Furthermore, in our Oregon oddities from whatsupwiththat.com, OMSI cancels climate talk due to skeptics being on the panel. And again, from the Willamette Week on Bagelgate, another sellout. Kettleman's Bagels this time, but they claim they will not change after they sold out to Noah and Einstein's, the national bagel coffee chain. The last note of Oregon oddity comes from the Associated Press, Dateline Grants Pass, Oregon. A young wolf from Oregon has become a media celebrity while looking for love, tracing a zigzag path that has carried him hundreds of miles nearly to California, while his alpha male sire and a sibling that stayed home near the Idaho border are under a death warrant for killing cattle. Wandering wolf inspires hope and dread. Wandering Wolf on Twitter was already taken. Police state updates with an amazing story. And this is, I would think, not knowing a ton about this story, but we're going to give you the clip that break down some of it, and there's a lot more information. NewWorldOrderReport.com, Jonathan Elinoff, based out of Colorado, broke the story and helped make it go large. His investigation led to the arrest of an ex-sheriff in Denver. And we can even get it from the Deutsche Press Agency. Denver sheriff jailed in a prison that bears his own name.
Former Arapahoe County Sheriff Pat Sullivan stood before a judge this morning to talk about a court case. This time, it was his own. Sullivan is accused of trying to trade methamphetamine for sex with another man. The South Metro Drug Task Force says two confidential informants told them Sullivan has traded drugs for sex on multiple occasions. Sheriff's deputies have seized homosexual pornography from Sullivan's home. Current Arapahoe County Sheriff Grayson Robinson says they are investigating whether Sullivan may be HIV positive. He said that is still under investigation. Several men have come forward saying they partied and had sex with Sullivan in exchange for meth. Those men are making these claims on video interviews handed over to 9 News. We learned Sullivan at one point had a restraining order against one of those men. For more on that, 9 wants to know investigator Jeremy Hohola joins us. Jeremy.
All right, Adele, we have just found some documentation here showing that Sullivan had apparently a troubled relationship with one of these young men who you'll see on tape in a moment. That young man, William Hadley, was the target of a restraining order by Sullivan, who told the courts and deputies that he was trying to help rehabilitate Hadley, but that Hadley then got aggressive and violent. Hadley then made some shocking claims on video to radio host Tom Martino.
As Pat Sullivan sits behind bars, 9 Wants to Know has obtained video interviews with men who claim they partied, had sex, and used drugs with the former sheriff. These video interviews were handed over to 9 News by radio show host Tom Martino.
Some of them claimed they were minors at the time.
And Jonathan Elinoff.
I was in a specific situation where these people were comfortable with me.
The two claim they found 6 people who spoke on the record about Sullivan's secret lifestyle of hard drug use and flings with young men. William Hadley claims on tape he smoked meth with Sullivan at a Denver park.
You've seen him do meth?
Yeah. I mean, we've sat at Cheeseman in the back seat of his car, or his SUV, and smoked a lot of dope.
That same man also claims he performed a sex act in front of Sullivan and that he often gave drugs to other people.
Me, Jeremy, my boyfriend, Jeff, have all been at his house while his wife has gone sitting in the garage smoking dope.
Dope to these men means methamphetamine. When asked about the credibility of their claims, Martino says the stories remain consistent with a common theme. Sex with Sullivan, who fed their addictions as payment.
Not all of these people knew each other, and they all told similar stories, what I call a thread of truth. And when you have that thread, that common thread, the same locations in town, the same drugs, the same people, we thought there was credibility, and that's when we went to the police because of that.
And Martino says he was handed notes with names and locations to police, but not the, or he handed those notes to police, but not the video you just saw because investigators didn't ask for it. In the meantime, we pulled quite a bit of documents from court that mentioned Sullivan's name. We are going through stacks of this paperwork right now, and we'll see what we'll have for 10 o'clock tonight.
All right, sounds good. We'll look for it then. Thanks, Jeremy.
Now that is effective, direct, local action. Huge hat tip to Jonathan Elinoff of NewWorldOrderReport.com, and there are other clips and a ton more documentation getting into that story. He's on the other two main networks, and he's provided all the amazing breakdown on that story. Furthermore, on our police state updates, researchers' video shows secret software on millions of phones logging everything. Is that plain enough from threat level? That is the now viral news story about Carrier IQ, and we'll touch on that again when we get to cyberspacewar.com. Border deal fuels concerns in Canada. That's from thestar.com, the Toronto Star. Defying police blockade, Boston's Occupy builds a city. And that is part of the on-the-scene reporting from Threat Level, another blog on Wired. Our last police state update note from CBS Local out of St. Louis. Survival shop reports jump in sales to people preparing for possible collapse. Finally, at this 12-1 news purge ass end, if we make it through December, Manchin breaks with Obama and Congress on payroll taxes, yet, of course, votes to give the military the power to imprison suspects indefinitely. This would be the amendments added and taken away from NDAA. But Democrats voted for giving the military power. Robert Casey of Pennsylvania, Kent Conrad of North Dakota, Kay Hagan of North Carolina, Daniel Inouye of Hawaii, Herb Kohl of Wisconsin, Carl Levin of Michigan, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Claire McCaskill of Missouri, Ben Nelson of Nebraska, Mark Pryor of Arkansas, Jack Reed of Rhode Island, Gene Shaheen of New Hampshire, and Debbie Stabenow of Michigan. We just want to add that and read it into the record, but of course we note there's no difference. It takes two crooked wings to fly this phony bureaucratic bird. But our other notes of West Virginia worry from WVMetroNews.com. Mr. B. Potato Chips files for bankruptcy. And I tried to find, I just can't remember, there was some catchy jingle that I remember from being a little kid in southern West Virginia and seeing those commercials for Ballard's or Mr. B's or all of those things. But I couldn't find it, so I didn't add any of the crappy videos. However, closing out this news purge with West Virginia worry, federal UBB report to be released next week. And that would be the federal report on the Upper Big Branch mine disaster in Montcoal, West Virginia. That's everything on the flagship site, MediaMonarchy.com. Let's turn quickly now, my friends. If we can get through the three other sister sites in the kingdom, we'll begin with FoodWorldOrder.com and the 12-1 binge and purge, probe, trap, addict. Nestle, sure, child labor occurs in the supply chain, so they allow a probe. That came from confectionerynews.com. Yes, your favorite chocolate companies, like so many of the other interlocking industries that we've discussed through this and many other episodes, of course, are not above child abuse. Major organic seed company owned by Pro-GMO Group, that's from FarmWars.info, Barb Peterson from here in the Pacific Northwest, People's Republic of Oregon. She's talking about Seeds of Change, that they make dressings and chocolate and things we sell at my store. They're, of course, owned by Mars. Food production must cut fossil fuel dependence, the FAO says. More on that from Bloomberg and straight to FAO.org. Energy smart agriculture needed to escape the fossil fuel trap. Meanwhile, family says in-flight meal killed flyer. Confessions of a former Coke addict, and that would be the Coca-Cola. And finally, on the 12-1 binge and purge, probe, trap, addict. Assets of bankrupt Yarnell's ice cream company have been sold at an auction. More on that from the Washington Post is, again, crash and burn all around. Rug pulled out by design. Food banks face peanut butter shortage for the holidays as, obviously, peanut prices soar due to droughts and other extreme weather events we referred to earlier. The prices soar, supply goes down.
You may have noticed the price of a common kitchen staple has gone up in the last year.
Across the country, peanut butter is up about 30%. KCO3's Eric Rucker is joining us live in Roseville with why this increase is especially hard for some of the local food banks.
Yeah, good morning. We're in Roseville at the Placer Food Bank, and people here say that peanut butter has always been one of the most expensive items they have to purchase, but now it has gone up a lot, and they have to use FEMA money, nearly $10,000 of it, just to buy the product. While other food banks rely on personal food donations, the Placer Food Bank buys in bulk. When it comes to peanut butter, the cost has gone up $2 per case. That's 12 jars per case. This year, they bought a few hundred less cases, but it's costing them thousands more. Now, Placer distributes to many local Placer County nonprofits, including St. Vincent de Paul. And if it wasn't for the extra federal money, they and others would just be out of it.
It's tremendous. Unless they see a donation from a store in their area, they're not going to have peanut butter because nobody has the funds to purchase this product. It's just too expensive.
And this kind of puts it in perspective. The food bank here in Placer County has a regular supplier that they go through. Well, just a short time ago, that supplier said, no, I am no longer going to give it to you because I can turn it around and sell it on the street, so to speak, and make a far greater profit. In Roseville this morning, I'm Eric Crocker, KCRA 3 reports.
I know somebody who bought 8 jars of peanut butter before the price went up.
Just a habit.
Yeah, it's like stockpiled.
It is. Wow, got 30%. I mean, that's luxury item these days.
Yes,
that's tough.
It is most definitely not peanut butter jelly time. I noticed on the bottom shelf of the peanut butter and jelly section at my store that the Adams peanut butter went up to like $7. And even that is, of course, owned by Smucker's. Continuing on Food World Order, a note that may now be a little too late for you, reducing holiday food waste. But food wasted in the U.S. annually could satisfy the hunger of the estimated 1 billion malnourished people worldwide, food expert says. More on Tristram Stewart, a food waste expert and contributing author to State of the World 2011 of the World Watch Institute, worldwatch.org. More from Ecocentric blog on Time Magazine and timesdaily.com. And we have noted in the past, of course, we could feed the world if we wanted to. That's not part of the agenda. We could use that technology to shoot the guy a banana that he needed, like Bill Hicks joked. And we noted as well that I think we, waste enough food every year to fill, Staples Centers in California. New United Nations report says food strains problematic. 70% more food needed to feed the world by 2050. From the UPI, land degradation and shortages of farmland and water resources mean feeding the global population by 2050 is daunting, a UN report concludes. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, the aforementioned, in a new report said agriculture production since the 60s increased 150% while cropland grew 12%. That, the FAO said, means there are significant trends in land degradation and water system depletion. Water wars, of course, on the coming soon agenda. DNA barcoding catches food fraudsters and identifies animals. From the CTV, scientists have discovered a range of new uses for a Canadian technology that can be used to peer into 30,000-plus-year-old permafrost, detect phony herbal medicines, and catch invasive species before they sneak across borders. EU bans claim that water can prevent dehydration. This from the Telegraph. Brussels bureaucrats were ridiculed after banning drink manufacturers from claiming that water can prevent dehydration. EU officials concluded that following a 3-year investigation, there was no evidence to prove the previously undisputed fact. Producers of bottled water are now forbidden by law from making the claim and will face a 2-year jail sentence if they defy the edict, which comes into force in the UK next month. That month may now be upon us. This is stupidity writ large. The euro is burning, the EU is falling apart, and yet here they are, highly paid, highly pensioned officials worrying about the obvious qualities of water and trying to deny us the right to say what is patently true. If there were ever an episode which demonstrates the folly of the great European project, then this is it, conservative MEP Roger Helmer said. The update, however, from the Telegraph, bottled water can keep you cool, say scientists who turned down the dehydration claims. Finally, on Food World Order, citing medical neglect, state grabs 200-pound Ohio child from his family out of the frying pan into the foster system fryer. From the Sandusky Register, an Ohio third grader who weighs more than 200 pounds has been taken from his family and placed into foster care after county social workers said his mother wasn't doing enough to control his weight. Cleveland Plain Dealer reports that the Cleveland 8-year-old is considered severely obese and at risk for such diseases as diabetes and hypertension. The case is the first state officials can recall of a child being put in foster care strictly for a weight-related issue. Lawyers for the mother say the county overreached when authorities took the boy last week. They say the medical problem he is at risk for do not yet pose an imminent danger. A spokeswoman said the county removed the child because caseworkers saw his mother's inability to reduce his weight as a medical neglect.
The debate on separating obese children from their parents is once again front and center after a 200-pound boy in Ohio, who's in third grade, by the way, is now separated from his family.
Now, this is nothing new in the state of New Mexico. This state saw its own similar drama several years back when Amari Rahino was temporarily taken away from her parents. News 13's David Romero is live in the Newsplex with more on the similar cases. David.
Well, good morning, Matt and Elizabeth. That's pretty much the same dilemma in Cleveland right now. If it isn't truly the kid's best interest when the kid's weight puts them at great health risk to take them away from their parents. Now, the obese 8-year-old from Cleveland Heights was placed in foster care in October when caseworkers said his mother wasn't doing enough to control his weight. That's strikingly similar to what happened here in Albuquerque back in the early 2000s. Anna Marie Rahino's weight also put her in an extremely obese category, and Children, Youth, and Families Department officials removed her from her parents' custody when they said the parents weren't doing enough to control the weight. It was later determined that Anna Marie suffers from a rare disease that caused the weight to go up and down. Since then, CYFD officials have reexamined the issue and told News 13 they would look at the ways to get health professionals and the parents together to get the child to a healthy weight. Now, the same type of department in Ohio says they stand by their decision to remove the kid from the home. Elizabeth, back to you.
All right, David, thank you. And by the way, doctors and lawyers are weighing in on this case as well. In a recent editorial from the Journal of the American Medical Association, a panel actually said that parents should be held responsible for letting their children get obese.
All right, we asked you before to send in your thoughts on this on Facebook and Twitter, and we're getting a number of them this morning. Lana Cole wrote on my Facebook page, she said,
You know what? I'm going to call it there. I don't need to hear from their Facebook comments because there's a more important angle to this story. And as we're running out of time and we remain to see if we're going to get through all of it, we'll cut it right there and I'll shut up because there's a more important related update. As I noted, out of the frying pan into the foster system fryer, this obese Ohio boy, we grab it from InfoWars with the clip. New study shows U.S. government fails to oversee treatment of foster children with mind-altering drugs.
ABC News exclusive investigation and indictment of what the U.S. government does to some of the most vulnerable children in this country. We have spent a year investigating a horrible secret. Tens of thousands of foster care children, even infants, given powerful mind-altering drugs that at times in doses and combinations considered too risky even for adults. And remember this statistic. Foster children are given these potent drugs at an alarming 13 times the rate of other children. Tomorrow, a government GAO report will paint a portrait of a grotesque failure to protect foster children. But over the past years, so many of them have come forward to us to tell us about their lives, young kids living sometimes as sleepwalkers, sometimes reeling out of control.
These are the meds that I've been taking since I was 4. 1, 2, 3, 11, 12, 13.
Lexapro. The last one is Abilify. All their medications, they made me feel as if I had 1,000 bricks on my head.
They are tiny witnesses who came out of the shadows to tell and show us the mountain of potent drugs, antidepressants, antipsychotic drugs they were given in America's foster care system.
That was just a zombie.
And keep in mind, these are vulnerable children who've already been dealt a hand from hell, so many of them born into homes filled with neglect and abuse and bounced from foster home to foster home.
I were in 28 homes. I felt sad because no one would keep me or love me.
Consider the case of 7-year-old Brooke, taken from a drug-addicted mother, just 43 pounds, but given 5 mind-altering drugs at the same time, a combination that is deemed too risky even for adults.
Brooke, you need to get down. Come here, Brooke.
And foster parents who want to help soon learn that if they don't give medications, the child can be taken away.
We were told to put our faith in the system, and that's what we did. No one said the medications could be causing the problem. They kept saying she needs more medications.
But in Brooke's case, one doctor, a psychiatrist, recognized the problem. And Brooke went from this, being weaned off the strongest medications, to this.
No adult should be receiving the drugs that different variety, but certainly not at these ages.
Delaware Senator Tom Carper is holding a congressional hearing tomorrow demanding changes in the foster care system in this country. parallel to the year-long ABC News investigation, the GAO report, which found in some cases psychotropic drugs were given to infants, even though there is no idea what the long-term effects of these drugs could be on a child's developing brain. And the report found in 5 states alone out of 100,000 foster kids, 26,000 were on some form of psychotropic drugs.
How is it happening?
When you don't have the time, the quick rush to judgment is the answer is a pill.
Michael Perino, prominent child advocate, says these children are issuing a cry for help.
When we read that foster kids are medicated up to 13 times more than other kids, is it because they are a more troubled population?
They are troubled, yeah. There's no question that foster kids can be troubled, very troubled. Given what they've gone through, the answer isn't to always try to change their brain chemistry.
Medications that can keep a child from his life. Look at 11-year-old Chianti, prescribed 12 medications over the course of 4 years for conditions doctors now say he didn't have.
I'm not ADHD, I'm just naughty. I am not bipolar at all.
This is footage of Chianti trying to come off these medications. And this is Chianti today. He's in honors classes at school, and he got one prescription that heals beyond imagining. Chianti has been adopted.
Now you're part of the family.
Which takes us back to Brooke. Remember her? She, too, has a permanent hug, a mom, a dad, a home.
Yeah, you hug all the anger out, right? She just hugs and hugs and hugs and gets all the anger out.
So who is responsible? And by the way, your taxpayer dollars are paying for this. Medicaid pays for these drugs. Well, tomorrow I will question the Federal Drug Administration, and Sharon Alfonsi goes out to track down doctors prescribing these medications.
So much more to say on that sinister subject, but we have to move to holyhexes.com. Well, we'll begin there with the 12-1 pop a culture news purge of good spirits and the last taboo. There is an interesting op-ed piece on sunherald.com called An Evil Force Lurks Among Us, and it's a well-written piece about the thing that allows torture and crime and murder and theft and terror and all of those things is bureaucracy. Preachers confront the last taboo, condemning greed amid the Great Recession. Billy Graham in good spirits in the hospital, reports the Belief blog on CNN. Meanwhile, Israel's new anti-American advertisements, not kosher.
A campaign to get Israelis to move back to Israel. A Jewish teen rises to the top of the Billboard hip-hop chart. Anti-Semitic vandalism in Brooklyn. And more of the Jewish news that's changing your world right now in this episode of The Week in Review. Hello, and welcome to the Jewish Channel's Week in Review. I'm Stephen I. Weiss. A semi-covert national campaign has Israel trying to get expatriate citizens to move back to the Jewish state. Here at TJC, we've pieced together many reports from people across the United States to find that a concerted effort is targeting Israeli expatriates in at least 5 cities to convince them that their heritage will be lost if they don't soon leave America to go back to Israel. This billboard in Hollywood, Florida is one very visible sign of the campaign. The Hebrew text says, "Before Abba is changed into Daddy, the time has come to return to Israel." While no announcement of a national effort has been made, TJC has found that the same or similar message has been posted on billboards in Boston, Palo Alto, New York City, and Los Angeles.
Continuing the pop culture news purge, Iran's leaders believe end of days is here. More on that from Flash Traffic blog. 3 in South African court for a church attack plot. UK cops hunt the relative of a demonic woman. Therapist brainwashed a woman to think she was in a satanic cult. And VigilantCitizen.com asked the question, is the Castlewood Center in St. Louis a mind control site? Meanwhile, a woman was imprisoned on a Scientology cruise ship for 12 years. Meanwhile, of course, the church denounces the claim. Cop accused of theft uses a paranormal defense. He said it was a ghost that was stealing that stuff from the evidence room. Kentucky church bans interracial couples. Pat Robertson says the peace sign is a broken upside-down cross, and I remember hearing that in church growing up. Meanwhile, yoga is the work of the devil. Harry Potter and yoga are evil, says Catholic Church exorcist. New film to highlight the mystery of Elvis's faith. And the new TV spot for The Devil Inside is creepy, comma, unsurprising. And a second look at some show that I only made a note about because I heard about it several times in a row, called American Horror Story. A second look at American Horror Story from Time Magazine. And from Tribune.com.pk, the Satanic Ritual Stabbing Retrospective. That could also fall under our murder and mayhem, my friends. But closing out this pop culture, good spirits, and the last taboo, who was missing from Obama's Thanksgiving Day message?
It's a Turkey Day tragedy, a cranberry sauce catastrophe, a heaping helping of criticism of the president for this.
So today I'm thankful to serve as your president and commander-in-chief. I'm thankful that my daughters get to grow up in this great country of ours. And I'm thankful for the chance to do my part, as together we make tomorrow better than today.
That from the president's annual Thanksgiving Day speech. In it, he thanked U.S. troops serving overseas and paid tribute to volunteers serving in soup kitchens. Almost immediately, KPNX reports his critics noted something was missing.
President Obama did not thank or even mention God in his speech.
However, he corrected that, and the final update on this pop culture news purge note from the Belief blog again. Obama delivers very stark Christian message at the recent Christmas tree lighting. Furthermore, on holyhexes.com, Mexico adds yet another brick to the 2012 legend. Archaeologists say artifact refers to date, but downplays doomsday. From the Associated Press, Mexico's Archaeology Institute downplays theories that the ancient Maya predicted some sort of apocalypse would occur in 2012, but on Thursday it acknowledged that a second reference to the date exists on a carved fragment found at the southern Mexico ruin site. Meanwhile, Stonehenge reveals new clues of ancient worship. From Discovery.com, Stonehenge may have been a place for sun worship long before the iconic stones were erected more than 5,000 years ago. And for more on this story, let's go to a computerized voice.
Extraordinary new discoveries are shedding new light on why Britain's most famous ancient site, Stonehenge, was built and when. Current research is now suggesting that Stonehenge may already have been an important sacred site at least 500 years before the first stone circle was erected, and that the sanctity of its location may have determined the layout of key aspects of the surrounding sacred landscape. What's more, the new investigation being carried out by archaeologists from the universities of Birmingham, Bradford, and Vienna massively increases the evidence linking Stonehenge to prehistoric solar religious beliefs. It increases the likelihood that the site was originally and primarily associated with sun worship. The investigations have also enabled archaeologists to putatively reconstruct the detailed route of a possible religious procession or other ritual event which they suspect may have taken place annually to the north of Stonehenge.
Quickly blasting through the rest of holyhexes.com, a really important piece on Peter Dale Scott and his breakdown of the deep events and dark forces surrounding the manifesto and the events of the official story of the Norway nightmare and Anders Breivik. Air Force Academy builds stone circle for pagan worship. Chaplain Major Darren Duncan says in a Los Angeles Times article, "We're here to accommodate all religions, period." Of course, reminding us of the Temple of Set and former Army Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino and the Church of Satan. From the Los Angeles Times again, cult mystic holds March of Skulls for Mexico's drug war dead. It was billed as the first act of collective psycho magic in Mexico. The call, made by the cult mystic Alejandro Jodorowsky, said the event would seek to heal the country of the cosmic weight of so many dead in the drug war by gathering for something he called the March of the Skulls. It was a wet and frigid Sunday morning in the mountain capital. Hundreds of Jodorowsky fans answered the open convocation. Why? Because he is a well-known Chilean-born filmmaker and also tarot guru, known for his films like El Topo, Santa Sangre, and The Holy Mountain. Apparently, there's a Twilight Zone podcast with new episodes. TheTwilightZoneNetwork.com. What you need. SFFAudio.com has all the other fantastic new and old time radio. Sandusky, Pedoblasts, Rings, and Lawyers. Is Sandusky part of a larger pedophile ring? Sandusky, Jerry Sandusky, the Penn State scandal, the connections to the Franklin scandal. Our last piece on Holy Hexes will segue quickly into all the rest on cyberspacewar.com. reports of Twilight seizures echo subliminal exorcist panic. Twilight Breaking Dawn film reportedly triggering seizures.
The newest Twilight movie has fans reacting to more than just Team Jacob or Team Edward. People are claiming a very graphic scene in that movie is triggering seizures.
New tonight, Chris Pickle talked to a Roseville man and his girlfriend who say the movie sent him to the ER.
Well, Twilight is expected to take another bite out of the box office over the Thanksgiving holiday, but some are claiming that this movie can be hazardous to your health.
He scared me big time.
A real-life drama Brandon Gephardt and Kelly Bauman did not expect while watching Twilight.
And so I like, kind of sat up, and next thing I know, I'm just waking up to like everyone shaking me in the whole theater, is like looking at me.
An intense scene apparently triggered a seizure in Brandon.
Convulsing and snorting and trying to breathe.
On just one internet site, we found a half dozen similar claims.
And they kept doing flashes of red, black, and white.
Which is called photosensitive epilepsy, which is light flashing.
The medical director of pediatric neurology and epilepsy for Sutter and Sacramento says it's rare, but flashing red lights can trigger seizures in people who are genetically predisposed.
It's like the light switch going off because it hits your whole brain at once.
A 1990s episode of Pokemon with flashing lights triggered seizures in children. Dr. Chez says manufacturers have revamped modern TV and video games so screens do not project the dangerous light frequency.
The trouble with a theater, it's dark, the light's flashing in there, it's more like a strobe light. And for those people, it's not like the screen has been modified like the TVs or the video games now.
Dr. Chez says a single seizure should not cause long-term damage. Brandon is getting checked out by a specialist, but this couple wants fans to be warned the scariest thing in the theater may not happen on the screen.
After like Googling it and kind of looking at other people who have kind of experienced like the same thing, I'm like, okay, so pretty much the movie that did it now, so.
You didn't go to the next movie?
No.
Dr. Chez says if you want to be on the safe side, cheap blue lens sunglasses can actually filter those harmful red lights. But Kelly says, sunglasses or not, Brendan has fulfilled his duties as a boyfriend and does not have to see any more Twilight movies.
You guys are laughing. I told you, okay? Dr. Chez says many people with this form of epilepsy can go their entire lives and never know it because specific circumstances have to take place to trigger a seizure. A Utah woman says the new Twilight film is so graphic it sparked her husband's seizure. She says a specific scene in the movie prompted the medical condition. ABC4's Noah Bond is reporting from the District 20 Megaplex in South Jordan, where he watched the movie.
The couple says this scene flashes bright light on the audience, and the scene is incredibly graphic. That's why the husband says the stimulation made him pass out and his body shake. Breaking Dawn, the latest Twilight movie to amaze audiences, is sweeping the nation.
Get ready. They're coming for Bella. They're not going to touch her.
And it's getting a lot of publicity.
If you kill her, you kill me.
But now, for all the wrong reasons, allegedly causing a man's seizure.
I don't think that could really happen, but I don't know. I have no idea.
I've heard of lights being able to do that, but I don't know. I haven't seen it, so.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I have no idea.
The moviegoer asked us not to share his name, fearing he could lose his job.
I don't really remember what happened after that. I think I blacked out. And according to her, I was shaking and mumbling different noises.
His wife was sitting by his side.
He started mumbling, and he was blinking on and off with his eyes. And so at that point, I got in front of him. I was kneeling in front of him. And I was kind of slapping his face.
They left the movie theater early, but in the process, forgot his phone inside.
When I went back in the next day, I found out that it actually happened to another girl in the theater.
And that's why this couple is coming forward. They fear the flashing lights during the delivery scene caused his seizure. The husband says he's in good health and he's never had a seizure before. So from now on, he says he's going to be more selective before choosing a movie. Reporting from South Jordan, Noah Bond, ABC 4 News at 9 on CW30.
I didn't see it. I don't know.
It's always a good idea, of course, to be cautious, but how do you know when you're going to run into a movie with a scene that's got flashing lights coming at you?
I have no idea.
That's a tough one.
Should be more selective. Breaking Dawn is making well-timed headlines after several moviegoers around the country reported seizures during a particularly graphic birthing scene, which includes flashes of red, black, and white. This latest film in the Twilight saga, released on a Black Friday and during the new moon, not only proves H.L. Mencken right again when he said, of course, that no one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American public, is not going to be more choosy than they choose crappy movies. So it not only reproves H.L. Mencken right yet again, but it also gives us an opportunity to look at another infamous bit of pop culture panic. Ever since its original release in 1973, William Friedkin's The Exorcist has conjured up more fear than almost any other horror film. Could that be due to its use of so-called subliminal imagery? Lastly, we wonder if Breaking Dawn is planting the seed of a demonic child meme like Rosemary's Baby and The Omen did before in the minds of the malaised masses. That is a quick piece I actually wrote myself on HolyHexes.com with more background from Holy Hexes, Wikipedia, CaptainHowdy.com, and more. This story is cross-posted and cross-referenced on cyberspacewar.com. Twilight Breaking Dawn film reportedly triggering seizures. And we'll quickly move through other film-related notes on cyberspacewar.com. The original Metropolis, 1927 silent sci-fi movie ahead of its time. You can see the restorations and all the other amazing pieces that have now been available about this film. Fritz Lang, masterpiece. And I did actually, I think, notice that the much maligned Moroder 80s synth pop version is on Instant Watch. And I was going to reference earlier the people choosing bad movies, they need to navigate Netflix. Connect for Windows to offer Minority Report computer control from the Telegraph. A new generation of PCs controlled by gestures is on its way after Microsoft revealed it is specially adapting its Xbox Kinect technology for Windows computers. The story goes on, but we get a related update from my man Jeff Simmons at radio23.org, who said, hey, watch for this new Microsoft windshield in the new Mission Impossible trailer.
An hour ago, a bomb blew up the Kremlin. The president has initiated Ghost Protocol. The entire IMF has been disavowed. Now I've been ordered to take you to Washington, where they will hang the Kremlin bombing on you and your team, unless you were to escape after assaulting Brandt and me. But if any one of your team is caught, they will be branded terrorists out to incite global nuclear war.
So what happens now?
Your mission, should you choose to accept it.
So, what's the play?
Bring dead dreams, yeah, stupid will, come on, keep around, lose it, keep it down, try to fight it, try to deny it, stupid you will fail. What I do it will, shooting from the hip, yeah, boy, shoot and kill. What's a breath left on my deathbed, screaming air, yeah, super ill.
Who are you really, Brent?
We all have our secrets. Don't we, Ethan?
Okay, now remember, blue is glue.
And when it's red,
dead.
You're not gonna make it!
You're not helping.
Gosh, that sounds loud. Yes, the fourth Mission Impossible film is, of course, all about false flag black op activities pulled off by interlocking international intelligence agencies with triple agents. But, of course, that never happens in real life, right? Mission Impossible 4, of course, will be followed by, if you follow the logic, MI5 and MI6. Quickly continuing, cyberspacewar.com from the Telegraph. Apple iTunes flaw allowed government spying for 3 years, reporting British software company sells governments their hacking software, FinFisher, that exploits a security flaw in iTunes to deliver remote monitoring program through a bogus update. Are you surprised? Apple was informed of the flaw 3 years ago, but did not patch security breach until earlier this month. according to KrebsOnSecurity.com. You shouldn't be surprised because it's business as usual. Lieberman wants a terrorist flag button added to Blogger, which hosts Media Monarchy and all the other related sites. More on this from the indispensable Cryptagon.com and the dispensable New York Daily News. The X-47B AV-2 test flight is a success. Northrop Grumman's Unmanned Combat Air System, UCAS, demonstration program took a step forward with a successful test flight on 11/22 of their AV-2. It took off at Edwards Air Force Base, and of course, the rise of the machines is taking place right before our very eyes. And in a related note, the X-37B's mysterious mission extended. That would be the secret space plane. It's lost, it's found. Phobos Grunt now lost in space due to the latest God knows what is going on in outer space as we're trying to figure out what's going on in our own inner space. More on the saga of Phobos Grunt, the Russian spacecraft, from spaceflightnow.com. And we reach the 12-1 DEF CON news purge on cyberspace war. SOPA, Carrier IQ, and you. A comedy of errors led to false water pump hack report. You may recall last week we went over the story of the feds denying the water utility hack story, giving no evidence to support earlier claims. We gave you this story originally on cyberspacewar.com. A comedy of errors, they say. Hackers target United Nations Development Program website. Crack this code and become a British spy. Oh, there's the MI5 and 6 again. SOPA on the ropes. That's the Online Piracy Act. Bipartisan alternative to net censorship emerges. More on that from ArsTechnica.com as our Congress critters worldwide are all moving on the same pieces of legislation to outlaw us. Critics line up to bash maker of secret phone monitoring software. That would be the aforementioned Carrier IQ that an amateur researcher discovered. More on that from The Register as well. Threat level. Cyber Monday 2011 set a shopping record, and there is a clip for you, but we're dumping it to get to our final story on cyberspacewar.com and on this now overtime episode 241 of MediaMonarchy.com. It was the second story we covered on the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com. Cyber war explodes in Syria with State Department-funded software called Siphon. Let's get the news report angle to tie in to Syria Siphon.
A phone call from Syria.
Opposition activist Musab al-Husseini is calling via Skype from the city of Homs, a major center of the Syrian protest movement.
Musab, do you feel safe right now talking to me on the internet?
Yeah, I feel safe now because I use a software to get the encryption connection by the internet.
Husseini says he just installed Siphon, an encrypted networking system that allows Husseini to circumvent Syrian government firewalls that blocked Skype. Siphon also helps him evade online surveillance by Syrian intelligence agencies. Canadian businessman Rafal Rahazinski's company designed Siphon with funding from the U.S. State Department.
We decided to start actively propagating among the Syrian community about 3 months ago, and then much more aggressively about 3 weeks ago. So we've seen the numbers go from a handful of individuals, you know, now reaching up to the low thousands.
Siphon is delivered to Syrian opposition members discreetly, either through text messages or emails that guide them to links where they can download the software. The government in Syria controls media and telecommunications networks and refuses to allow most foreign journalists into the country. So opposition activists use the internet to distribute images of the regime's deadly crackdown on demonstrators. But President Bashar al-Assad's security forces have also proven effective at tracking down dissidents using internet and cell phone surveillance.
What makes it even more problematic and something that I think needs to be elevated on the political agendas in both Europe and the United States is that Western companies from America and from European member states are actually providing precisely the tools that Assad and his collaborators are using against people.
This month, a series of investigative reports by Bloomberg and the Citizen Lab prompted two California-based internet companies to announce they would cooperate with U.S. investigators after their surveillance technology was discovered discovered in Syrian government hands. An Italian company, Aria S.p.A., announced it had frozen work on a new surveillance center in Damascus. But Damascus appears to have other weapons in its cyber arsenal. This month, the European Union slapped sanctions against three members of the hacker group known as the Syrian Electronic Army. They're all accused of calling for violence against civilians in Syria. Musab al-Husseini, the Skype caller in Syria, knows this violence only too well.
There's more than five or six of my friends have been killed.
He says Western-supplied programs like Siphon may help protect members of the opposition as they continue their dangerous struggle against the government.
And what is it that you're fighting for?
We are fighting for freedom, for democracy, for dignity.
On the streets and over the internet. Ivan Watson, CNN, Istanbul.
So it's Siphon. I was pronouncing it wrong all this time. P-S-I-P-H-O-N. Sure looks like the word PSYOP. For a psychological operation, our software has also been broken by design, as so many other things, my friends. That brings, I think, an end to this loud-ass episode 241 of MediaMonarchy.com. Again, kind of battling some technical difficulties here. It's December 2nd, 2011. This has been episode 241 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show. Coming to you live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. I suppose now I see that our following DJ hasn't come in, and that's why I was kind of hedging my bets and cutting clips short and not. I enjoy going over our Twitter feeds, but I fear that since it's not really organized and laid out, that it would be just a mess of me trying to look at them and scroll over them and go, yeah, that one's important. But if you go to twitter.com/mediamonarchy, that feed has everything from all of my sites, including everything from CorbettReport.com, AllGov.com, and other news sites. Non-stop, round-the-clock news updates from all around the world. On the top there, you'll also see links to two of my other related Twitter feeds. Navigate Netflix and Pump Up the Volume. NavigatingNetflix.com, of course, the joint venture between myself and TragedyAndHope.com. Helping you find the time for the movies that feed your mind. NavigatingNetflix.com, some of the recent feeds and tweets on that account, getting into The Last Mountain, a documentary about mountaintop removal in West Virginia, and so many other things. And, of course, Pump Up the Volume, covering nothing but music, giving you Song of the Day and videos and all kinds of other amazing multimedia. I won't belabor any of this any more than I already have, my friends. This has been, like I said, the jam-packed episode 241. And the way we're going to go out, one, to remind you of that forthcoming federal report on the mining disaster in West Virginia that occurred in early 2010. The federal report coming soon next week. New world next week, if you will. So to bear that in mind, as well to provide a bit of bookend from our opening bit from Merle Haggard, we'll go out with Johnny Cash from his American Outtakes from his amazing sessions in his closing years with the one and only Rick Rubin. It's called A Lump of Coal. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster, Site and Show, Media Monarchy, episode 241. Reminding you, as always, my friends, don't hate the media. Become the media. Take care.
I'm just an old chunk of coal, but I'm gonna be a diamond someday. I'm gonna grow and glow till I'm so blue, pure, perfect. I'm gonna put a smile on everybody's face. But I'm gonna kneel and pray every day, lest I should become vain along the way. I'm just an old chunk of coal now, Lord, but I'm gonna be a diamond someday. I'm gonna learn the right way to talk. I'm gonna search and find a better way to walk. I'm gonna spit and polish my old rough edged self until I get rid of every single flaw. I'm gonna be the world's best friend. I'm gonna go around shaking everybody's hand. I'm gonna be the cotton picking rage of the age. Yes, I'm gonna be a diamond someday. I said, I'm just an old chunk of coal now, Lord, but I'm gonna be a diamond someday.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the New World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether you did not go up with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.